Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to Tone Talk with Mark Uzansky and Dave Friedman. It's episode 138, and we've got Ron Minnelli of RJM Music Technology. What's up, Ron?
Hey there.
Guys. How are you?
Doing all right.
And Dave's on his regular mic. He's having some tech issues tonight.
Absolutely. Completely screwed.
I actually think I'm going to raise your volume a little bit.
Okay.
You're a little low in the mix here compared to Ron and myself, I think. So, what's that?
I said, I can't tell.
No, but I can't tell how loud I am, but Ron is a little louder than you. So, all right. So Ron, you're in beautiful San Diego.
Yep. Although, just heard it's the, in May, San Diego was actually the cloudiest city in the nation. It's been like weirdly gloomy here. Like this never happened in like 20 years.
It's not only there.
Yeah, you got it there too.
Gloomy as hell. I mean, I just got back from Michigan and it was way nicer.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm not complaining. It's, you know, it can get pretty toasty here. So, at some times, or at least lately. So, you know, a little change doesn't hurt for sure.
Absolutely not. I mean, May, June. Well, it was May gloom and no,
what May is gray it? And June gloom.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Yep, and we got a lot.
I had a sip to drink yet, and I'm messing up my speech.
It's all right. We'll get through it.
yeah. It's just starting to get really hot here in Florida.
Yeah.
So.
It's hot all the time there, isn't it?
I mean, you know, we've got our nice just before it started to get really warm, we were having some like San Diego kind of weather, you know, like 50s at night, 70s during the day.
Nice. Ooh, nice.
Yeah, that's beautiful. You know, it was lasting for a little while, and then now it's just like into the 90s.
Right.
So, all right. I love San Diego, by the way. That's my favorite area.
I mean, yeah, it's a nice place for sure. It's as long as you can put up with the costs and everything, it's hard to leave.
Yeah, I can imagine. My wife has a friend who also has a place there, and great place. Thanks everybody for watching the show. Make sure you check out Sweetwater and our link below that we have for, we're an affiliate for Sweetwater. So if you buy something from them, we get a little kickback. So we appreciate it. And so check that out. If you plan on buying any gear, just click on our link before you go buy anything. And
especially a Bricosti reverb. I think someone should buy a Bricosti reverb.
I agree.
Or a Friedman stack.
Or a Yamaha piano.
Or a very expensive Gibson Les Paul or something.
Yeah, Murphy.
A piano. Perfect. Yes, a piano. Buy a piano, please.
A piano. Yeah, that would be great.
Please use our link.
or a mixing desk or something, you know, like they have it all. And then also fixpedalboards.com. Please check them out. I have a pedal board coming soon. You guys will be checking that out.
Yes, yeah, really soon. In fact, I got the last little box from Fix for it today.
Oh, sweet.
Other than that, it's done.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. Can't wait. Beautiful. Yeah. So we're going
to. Well, programming is not done. I didn't know I had to program it.
Oh. is that why you didn't answer my text? I don't know how to program it. I mean, I honestly.
I don't either.
Oh.
We'll figure it out.
Okay. All right. That's funny. Yeah. Well, I was like, yeah, because I have no clue how to do that stuff. Yeah, we got Dan Pfeiffer here. I saw Jason Tong there and James from Rewind. Hope all you guys are doing good and everybody else in the chat. So, good week, guys. I know, Ron, you had a good week, right?
Yeah. I got for a short week, you got a lot of stuff done. So, yeah.
Designing all the newest, latest, greatest things.
That's right. I actually counted because I knew this was going to come up, and I have 12 projects going on currently right now. So in various stages of completion. So I keep busy.
What about you, Dave? How many projects would you? for Friedman overall?
How many projects do I have going on? Mm-hmm. I have less than 12. That's a good question. I don't know, for just Friedman, I'm in various stages of completion before launch. I don't know, maybe six or seven. But that's just Friedman. There's other projects.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
That's cool. Yeah, that's a good question.
I think the worst answer, the thing you should ask is, how many amplifiers are sitting in my shop that I have to work on?
Okay, how many?
I really don't know. That's the problem.
More than 20?
Yes. More than 20.
Wow. I get all nervous if I've got like more than about 3 or 4 RMAs here to deal with. That's bad.
Maybe 20 things.
That's not RMA stuff. That's just mods and amps. Or is that RMA stuff?
Well, no. Mostly those are like mods or tweaks and things. I think there might be a few. Most of the time, Boutique does the repairs, but lately we had lost one of the techs. So lately, I've been kind of filling in, doing some. Or if it's something really interesting that I want to see, I haven't sent here. Like, really? You say it really does that? Really? Okay. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, it's not that interesting.
So, great.
You sent it here. Even though I talked to you on the phone for a while about this. Even though we chatted via email about this and I asked very specific questions, it turns out it was a preamp tube. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And shipping today is just like.
Oh, every amp, $120 every time. So,
yeah. That's why when it came time for me, like when you said to me, all you got to do is throw a 220K resistor across the bias point there or whatever. And I'm like, what? but just the idea of having to send the amp back to you or even bring it to somebody, I was just like, all right, I'm going to figure out how to do this. And you said it was easy. And it actually was just easy.
Two solder points across another resistor. So
yeah, it couldn't lower
the value of the resistor a little bit. And
it worked.
Go, I don't know, 220, put it across and it'll lower it a tiny bit. So, and then it'll bring in bias.
And it did.
Mm-hmm.
It worked perfect.
Yeah, of course.
You know your shit. Hey, we got a question from Pog Guitars. Dave, any update about Shigang Tube Factory opening?
I might be seeing some samples shortly. That's not spelled very well, but. I know what you mean.
Yes.
Shugang.
Shugang.
S-H-U-G-A-N-G, maybe. And I could be wrong with that.
Yeah, that's funny. So, Ron, tell us about RGM music technology. When did you, like, get into...
When did you decide to make the mistake of going into the music field?
Well, I felt like I just had some money I just needed to burn really, really, you know, over the course of several years. I don't know. So basically, around 2000 thereabouts, I was in the corporate world after basically going through school and I was doing telecom. And working on like early smartphones and stuff. And it's just, I knew I wanted to get out of there because I just didn't like the office environment and the whole corporate thing. And I was just like, I got to do something. And then about early 2000s, it's like, you know, if I'm going to do something, I should just do something. And I don't know, I've always been interested in this stuff and I've played a little bit, you know, since I was a kid and, you know, but was always always interested at least as much in the gear as the, you know, the music as well. And for me, they always went hand in hand. And, you know, I'd, you know, growing up, it was all about, like, you know, Rush and, like, you know, 80s era, Yes. And, you know, those kind of bands. And it's like, man, if you, you got to have, you know, it's like, it's all about, like, switching dramatically from, you know, one sound to another and, you know, soft and loud and soft and loud. And so it's, you know, the whole switching thing, you know, it's like, how do they do that? Cause I'm, like, I remember in high school doing the talent shows and all that, I had to do things like, my switching system was putting a heavy metal pedal next to a chorus pedal so I could step on them both at the same time and, you know, to alternate them, you know, to go clean chorus to drive. And so anyway, so that was always kind of in the back of my head. And, you know, and then, yeah, then just like, you know, I should do something. And then kind of for some reason it was the amp gizmo was the first thing. And, you know, that was just a box to add, you know, MIDI switching to whatever amp you have, you know, especially at the time, you know, there, you know, a lot of those amps were out now, like the Ecstasy, the Rectifier, the Road King, you know, some, you know, up to like 9-button foot switches that you have to have this huge thing to step on in addition to your pedal board. And so I kind of got my start on that and kind of, so I have no, you know, no manufacturing background, no mechanical design background. You know, had the electronics and the software, but it was a big learning process. And well, basically started the company in 2003, and it took me till 2005 to have something to sell. And that's when the first one came out. And you know, that one went reasonably well, and we sold it for quite a few years. And then well, did some other little things that didn't really go anywhere. And then 2007 decided, okay, I'm gonna do a rack switcher. And like, let's do something, you know, let's up the ante a little bit, a lot. And so that was the RG16. So you can switch 8 pedals and your amp at the same time. And that's where Dave comes into the picture. And he like pops by. I was in some.
Oh, what year was that? And how do we do this again?
07. It was 07. And I was in another, I had a little corner of someone else's booth, and I was, you know, showing off a prototype of this switcher. And like Dave shows up, it's like, hey, I'm Dave Friedman. And I'm like, no way. And then he's like, hey, send me one of these, okay? And I'm like, all right. And so actually Dave had some early input into buffer design and some of the things to as far as what to do and what not to do. And so that was, you know, incredibly helpful just to kind of get the, you know, get some good real world perspective on that. And, you know, and so that's, you know, that's kind of where it started. And then sort of that was kind of those kind of products were the first generation of stuff was the amp switching and the amp control, we'll say, and the loop switchers and all that. And then about 10 years ago was it came out with the Mastermind GT, the big MIDI controller with all the displays. And that was kind of like the next time where I kind of went, you know, let's do something crazy again. And, you know, just what's the best possible MIDI controller we can make. Cause we had done one smaller one before and it was fine, but it just, I got tired of telling people, like, you know, when they asked, does it do this? You know, a lot of times the answer was no, because it was really limited. And so I just said, well, what if we just took off like all the limits and didn't worry about, like, you know, I was kind of worried. It's like, oh, it's going to get expensive. And, but then my wife's like, you know, how pissed would you be if someone else like came out with something that was better? Like, you know, after you did, like, okay. Yeah. So we just kind of spent a couple of years and did that. And
I remember when you started doing that.
Yep. That was
you had a full head of hair, right?
Yeah, that's
by the end of the project, you didn't have the full head of hair anymore.
No. That was
No, I'm just joking.
I mean, this business is definitely as much responsible as my genetics are, for sure. but I think I actually like gave up and you know started cutting it short shortly before the whole Mastermind GT thing started. But I had plenty of business related stress prior to that. That was without a doubt a contributor.
I'm just joking.
Oh yeah, no, it's true. Oh my God, it's true though. It's like you know,
the Mastermind was a bitch of a lock you in a room and you know not come out for a while.
Yeah, it was the most ambitious thing I've done for sure. It was years of work, and it was just, you know, a lot of learning and all that, but it was cool. I mean, it's still being sold, and we've got, you know, all sorts of, you know, big name guys using it, and, you know, regular guys, and just, it, you know, it's, yeah, it's been a real success for us. And, you know,
so yeah, it's a real, pro controller, you know, it's really the only, pro, that's the little one. Well, that's not the littlest one, but that's the.
Oh yeah, that's the. It is of that.
1822 now would be the.
Yeah, that's the that's actually the one we came out with first. So kind of wanted to go big first, and then we kind of did the three row and the two row models.
Yeah. Wow, that's great. That's awesome.
But this is the first thing that ever had. Well, first of all, every switch is assignable to be anything.
Yep.
If you wanted it all presets, you could have it all be presets. You know, so any switch can be assigned and rearranged and done in different ways. And then you have, you know, you don't have to label a mechanical switch anymore. You know, it's, you have little screens for every switch, and, you know, you can label it, to your heart's content.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's great. Yep.
That was the idea. And, you know, just from talking to, you know, at that point, you know, we had been working with, you know, a good number of bands because of our other products, and we heard them complaining about the existing controllers, and it's like, oh, you know, we get our, you know, set list, like, you know, and we have to like sit there and button mash on the controller, you know, like on the bus on the way to the next show, and you know, try to, you know, edit in a set list that way, and mm-hmm. you know, and just, you know, there were limitations. And so we just say, well, what if we just let the user decide what, you know, what do you want the button to say? What do you want it to do? You know, you want your buttons to change for every song? Fine. You know, just, you know, really kind of throw, like, we just kind of found, like, you know, just really kind of threw a nice big processor in there and a bunch of memory, and just like, let's put a bunch of stuff in there and kind of let it, you know, give it some room to grow and let the users decide how they want to use it, instead of us trying to
that's the stuff that mostly, I mean, I use pretty much all the Ron stuff, and I mean, I just did the rigs for Chris Shiflett of the Foo Fighters, and, you know, had some four of those boards.
four 22s,
but not for one rig. Like there's two rigs, and then there's two backups. Backup controllers.
Wow. So, okay.
All on pedal boards, and there's two full rigs.
And then you program that also for him, or he programs?
Oh no. No. They do it. The tech. I mean, actually, Sean, the tech really took to it fast, actually, and he was all worried, and then he just kind of got it right away. So.
Yeah, Sean's great.
Well, there was other people in the organization that already had some, you know, like. I can't think of his name right now. The tech for Pat, and he kind of knew what's going on. So
yes, slowly but surely, we're getting to all these techs and kind of getting them on board, so they all know what they're doing, and that it's a real load off my shoulders when they learn how to program this stuff, and they don't have to ask me all the time. So,
and then right following that up, I had to work on Matchbox 20 rig that was sitting behind us in a tone talk we did one of the last times, and that had a bunch of those too, one for the tech, one for Kyle, and boy, was that a horrible
project.
Yeah,
someone else built it. Mm. And when I say everything was wrong with it, I mean everything, top to bottom, was wrong.
Yeah.
Like everything. Just when you think you got everything, you find one more thing. Oh. I go, you know, it would have been as much hours to rebuild the whole thing.
That's too bad.
It got sorted though, and they're happy.
Oh, that's good.
That's good.
And I hear there's another rig that I have to do now.
Well, that's good. The business keeps coming. You know, it's like seems like everything is back in full swing with people
on tour.
We've had a normal kind of tour season this year, you know, where it's like, you know, in the winter and the spring, like everyone, like all the big guys coming in and ordering and gearing up. And so it's seems like it's the first time where it's really been kind of normal, you know, since the pandemic. Or some semblance of normal.
Some semblance of normal. Yeah, I agree. At least in my industry, a lot of people haven't returned back to their offices, which is, I'm not in the music industry. I'm in the medical healthcare field, and a lot of people are still working remote the majority of the time, which is fine by me because this way I don't have to travel. So, but anyway. You
become one with Zoom.
Yeah, oh, I love it. It's great. I mean, you know, this is great. I mean, why get on a plane?
Right.
If I don't have to, I'd rather not. So Dave, we got Dustin Wilborn said, Dave, I'm visiting the Detroit area next week. What should I do?
You better send me an email and then
But the store is Motor City Guitar. Check out Motor City Guitar.
You better send me an email because it depends on how long you're going to be there and what kind of food you like.
All right, email Dave. I've got a question here. Dave, what's the best method or product to ABY 2 6-half stacks? What is that? 2 to 6 half stacks and run them simultaneously? Multiple ABY boxes or amp peats? Do you prefer the radial twin, Leal, or some other ABY unit?
Well, there's a big difference between wanting to do 2 or wanting to do 6 on what the recommendation might be. So, you don't make an AB box anymore, do you?
Not currently. Not currently.
But you're going to do that again, aren't you?
Probably. It's becoming the year of the small little adapter boxes again. We stopped doing a lot of the small stuff because we couldn't get the enclosures we're using. They started telling us that we needed to buy them like 5,000 at a time, and it's like and just in general they were kind of, I needed to update the some of the design and all that, so stuff's coming back. But
yeah, anyway. if you don't want to use the little bud box kind of thing, you know, you can get some enclosures built by Tim at Chapman.
Yeah. I mean, we've got it.
Sheet metal enclosures.
Yeah, for sure.
That looks pretty slick with a laser engraving.
We got the cool printer now too. Like you guys have, you know.
The Monty printer.
Yeah, so we can
really.
So we're getting all. Yeah, we're getting.
You're doing panels with it and things.
We're doing stuff like that, you know, And so, so, you know, at least our smaller products we can do on that, you know, and we do have, that's some fun stuff to play with for sure. And have that option.
We're just gonna front panels too of stuff as long as it's not, as long as it's powder coated.
Yeah. It doesn't stick so well on.
Doesn't do so well to aluminum.
Yeah. Found that out.
Yeah, for sure. But, that's cool. Well, that was an expenditure.
It really was. Yeah, I mean, but we were adding up how much we were paying for silk screening and all that, and we can make it work and have been making it work. So yeah,
you got to keep it running all the time.
Yeah, it's a temperamental beast. It surprisingly is. You have to like.
Yeah, it has to be working. It has to be working.
It gets all testy if you don't like run it all. I mean, and we're definitely not running it as much as we should be. And we expected to have more products out right now, like new stuff, than we do. We're still dealing with the parts situation.
Yeah.
So that's actually delayed several products that, you know, we have stuff that could be out right now, but won't be for many months because we can't get the parts to build them. And I thought we would be done with this by now, but there's stuff that we ordered in 2020 that we haven't seen yet. So that's, I mean, most of it's cleared up, but some things that are bad are really, really bad.
Yeah.
Hey, that's before we move on to a different subject, Dave, any suggestions for
Yeah, I mean, if you only want to do 2 amps, to be honest, the little Radial Twin City AB box is awesome. It's got a phase reverse and it's got a transformer isolated out. Works well. Works really well. So if you just want to do that, I would just go with that. I mean, I know that works well and it's solid.
Okay. Braxel says, Ron, thanks again for fixing my 6X.
Sure thing. Got to keep that stuff running.
Cool.
6X.
Yeah, what's a 6X?
PVC 6. Mastermind PVC 6X. That's, you know, our little pedal board switcher. And that was the, that's kind of like the you know, the later stuff. You know, we kind of made it in the story to the big controller. And then, you know, after that, I wanted to start doing some pedal board based stuff. And so that's where we have the Mastermind PVC 10 and the PVC 6X. And those, you know, have all that MIDI controller goodness, but then it'll have, 6 or 10 audio loops that you can switch pedals and all that. And so that's kind of been our, those are definitely our sort of our bigger sellers, because that's, you know, it's, you know, this is, you know, not less people building racks these days and a lot more doing pedal boards. And so
yeah, absolutely, sure.
Wanted to have sort of a rack style switching on the pedal boards.
Paul Crane wants to know what RMA stands for. I just know it's normally a return code for
so return merchandise authorization.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, I'm sitting there going, oh, yeah, what does it stand for?
What does it actually mean? Yeah.
Return code. That's what it meant for me. But
it's also RA number sometimes.
RA number. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. Got a question from Jason. What's up, Jason? Can Ron and Dave discuss what RJM products are typically used in a pro player's rack and their typical setup and purpose?
Look at that. You're going to actually make me think. all sorts of stuff. Typically in a rack, you would see what the one rack switcher that is available right now is the Effect Gizmo that's been around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a reordering type switcher. It's just a static signal path. You know, there's a few loops you can patch in different locations and things. That's what I use most of the time for the pro players, because generally pro players don't care about switching the order.
Yeah, they find the order. Find their order and stick with it.
And then GT22 or one of the GT switchers. And, you know, formerly when you still had it, I used a lot of those little mini mixers that you used to have, but you might again.
Not just might.
We'll again.
We can actually talk about that. That's like the next thing. And
Look at that. Cool too.
Anyway, yeah, but yes, so that's time to have line mixers again.
Yeah, and other than that, I mean occasionally would have used one of his former products, Tone Saver Buffer,
mm-hmm.
which was basically the buffer out of the switcher, which I had originally given you as a circuit to use.
Mm-hmm.
What else? I mean, like, not in Iraq though, we would use big pedal boards with the PVC 6 on a newer for the newer stuff, or PVC 8, right? 8,
6 or 10?
10. Sorry, PVC 10. Sorry, I've used 1,000 of them. Not 1,000, but I've used a ton of those, and I still don't get it right. And you know, pedal switching rigs, so we use that stuff a lot too over time.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's like, you know, it's our main things are just, you know, of course, just MIDI controller, and that's, you know, either the Mastermind GT LT or PVC, and then, you know, and then you've got you know, something to bring in your pedals, which is either the rack loop switcher or the Mastermind PVCs have the loops built in to switch the analog and some and digital too, pedals in and out of your signal path. Some of the products have the ability to reorder the loops. And then the other stuff is, you know, maybe bringing in some of the, you know, amp channel switching as well. We don't have a standalone amp controller at this moment, but some of our products have outputs that you can go and plug into the foot switch jack of things. And so it's basically those elements. And then, yeah, then there will be, we are finally bringing back the line mixer as well. So, you know, for being able to do, you know, parallel routing or wet, dry, wet and things like that. And so, so those are kind of our main product categories and what we use them for.
You have to bring back the little channel switching box too.
Yeah. The amp gizmo. Yeah. It's something I'm certainly thinking about. It's like one of those things, you know, it sold really well for a while. And I hear this from all sorts of people in this business where it's like, you just start competing with your own used market too much. And there's like, you know, a bunch of them just like floating around eBay and like, so everyone's just buying a used one. And anyway, and so we ran into that metal issue and some part obsolescence issues. And so we just kind of put it away for a while, but that'll probably come back too. It would not be, you know, too difficult to do. And because I am working on big stuff. It's just, not only can I not get the parts to finish them, but it's stuff that's going to take a while. And so that's kind of why I've actually kind of reversed myself and then started to, start making these, small little utility things again. And so, you know, so amp gizmo, you know, buffers maybe again. I mean, certainly the buffers in like everything else, but you know,
it seems like it. All these little things, doing them in the Bud box, Hammond box, whatever you want to call format, enables you to do small batches and things.
It's not
enriching yourself. You know, it's not that big of a deal. You know.
Yeah, it definitely not, and that's kind of the thing that kind of put me over the top. There is, we're just like, you know, it's like we do it, you know, and if it goes well, great. If not, well, we're not really out much, and you know, and it doesn't have to be a big effort, big endeavor to make some of these things happen, especially because a lot of them are things that I've done in the past. So the, you know, a lot of the design work is already done, and I'm just kind of adapting them to, you know, something smaller. But yeah, I've been, you know, we've barely ever done anything in Hammond boxes in the past, but with these little things, it just kind of became real convenient and got a source for inexpensive ones. We were getting them painted locally, like powder coated, like we were paying like 10 or 15 bucks, which was insane just to paint them, you know. So now we're sourcing the boxes overseas and stuff. And so it's, stuff's built here still, but the boxes are more easy to so we can actually like have reasonable prices for stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Good question, Jason. Thank you. Dollar Store Rockstar, I hope you didn't waste your $5 because I'm not sure Dave's going to tell you. Dave, are two of those Freedman projects, Warren DeMartini and the Vintage line?
Well, definitely the Vintage line.
Okay. Well, there you go. You got $250 worth. I'm just kidding.
Haven't worked out details on the other thing, or if that's even going to happen.
Cool. Lionel, what's up, man? Hey, Dave. Can the little sister of PT20 get power amp distortion?
It can. It's not really, if it's not totally designed for that, but it can. You'd probably want to use the gain structure on a lower setting, though, because there is a thing about too much, you know, like if there's too much gain on the front end and then you're slamming a power section where there's too much gain, well, yes, you're getting power amp distortion, but then it's just sounding like it's just overloaded.
It starts becoming mush.
So yes, but it's not ideally suited for that.
All right. Spartan Pride Podcast. Dave, did you ever do any audio work at Pine Knob?
No, I didn't. Okay. Seen some shows there.
Let's see.
That's a cool outdoor shed in Michigan, Detroit area.
I was wondering what that was. Yeah.
Yeah.
How close is the power section of the JJ to the Little Sister?
It's not really the same at all. The Little Sister has and the Pink Tahoe V2 have no negative feedback whatsoever. So there is no present circuit or anything. I mean, other than that, they're very similar. I mean, if I disconnected it in the JJ amp, it would be similar, close. Slightly different feel.
Greg Roberts, too, wants to know, what's that light blue guitar over your left shoulder, Ron?
Oh, that's just a pretty basic Strat. Be right back.
Yeah, show off his guitars.
Yeah, there you go. Come on, that's what they're for, right? Yeah, no, just I can't remember. It's an somewhat different color. I can't remember what it's called. Someone told me, but yeah, just a Strat, straight up.
Yeah, it's a nice color though.
Yeah,
it's not like a Pelham blue. It's not a
No, it's more like
it has a name. I just can't remember what it is.
Yeah, nice blue. Yeah,
and it is an actual color that came from Fender, but it was like kind of an oddball one.
Ah,
cool. Modern Vintage, Dave. What is the proper amplifier impedance to select when running a BE100 Deluxe into two different 2x12 cabs? If one cab is 8 ohms and the other is 16.
Well, I mean, you're probably closer to 4 ohms because in reality, 8 ohm speaker is really not 8 ohms. It's probably more like 6.5 or 7 ohms. And then 16 ohm is really not 16 ohms. It's probably more like 13 or 14 ohms, maybe. So then if you do that math, it's closer to 4 ohms. So that would be your best bet, closest to 4 ohms.
Hmm. Okay. Ray Mitchell
says, probably be safe either way, though, to be honest.
Bring back the mini amp gizmo.
Yeah, I mean, probably. Actually, the more you guys bug us, the more likely it's going to happen, because it's like, you know, that's like the main thing. It's like, we want to make sure that if we're going to do it, it's like people are actually going to buy it, you know, and they're not just going
to. I think it just needs to be 4 switches, to be honest. I know that won't switch everything, but.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Although interestingly, we had for a while, we had the switch gizmo, which was 4 switches and just 2 TRS jacks. And we still sold like way more of the mini amp gizmo, which had 8, because it almost entirely, like half of them went to like Mesa owners. Like,
yeah.
You know, Rectifier and Mark V. Now, of course, Mesa's doing their own MIDI stuff. So, you know, that's probably a different story, but I don't know. So yeah, that's, you know, part of the reason why it's, I'm still kind of like trying to figure out, well, you know, we don't want to put too much in the box because it raises the cost, but we don't want to, you know, make sure we don't have enough. We want to make sure we have enough to cover what people need as well.
Well, Sir did a little baby two function switcher.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Which works pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know,
the tiniest Hammond box available.
Oh yeah, the little 1590A.
Yeah, not the really tiniest, but the like Phaser 95, you know, like MXR Phase 95 size, which is just a little oblong, 4 inch by 1 inch or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah. So
3 inch, you know, 1 inch, whatever the size is.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. It's yeah, we're starting to get more, you know, more input from people that we should have it. So it'll probably happen. But yeah, I mean, it worked for the line mixer. You know, that was, people were bugging us. And so, yeah, so we might as well, I can have the premiere here. Right. So basically it's like our other one, our previous one had, you know, four stereo pairs in, one stereo pair out, and just a single volume knob. And that's it. You know, it was pretty simple. This one's a little bit different. I can get it all up in the camera here. And I conveniently diagrammed on the case here. I'm using my printer for good purposes here. So this is similar. There's a dry input, three wet inputs. They're stereo, but they're TRS because there's only so much you can fit on the side of a Hammond box. Mm-hmm. But they're all stereo. There's a jumper inside for the buffer where you can basically, it can either be stereo in, stereo out, or it could be mono in, stereo out, you know, so that you don't have to worry about that. It has also a mirroring is getting me. Buffer comes in, and then there's just a dry out here that you can use. Basically you can use this without a switcher and, you know, kind of run this. This can feed your wet effects. You have to, you know, split them with a Y cable or a passive splitter or something like that. They all come back to the inputs, and then it mixes it down for you, and it's got in.
Or you can even feed that mixer into another mixer.
You could do that.
Dry into the dry.
Yeah, I certainly could do that. Yeah. So I figure, yeah, that was one thing that the original lacked that I kind of regretted not having, and it seems like that's useful. And then the mixer has level controls for the three wet signals together is one control, and the dry has its own control. And so, so should be fun. It's fun. For the first time ever, I'm putting together a wet, dry, wet system here. it's kind of fun. You know, it's like, never done that before, but it's getting the pieces together. I haven't really gotten it all working yet, but it'd be kind of fun to actually do that and kind of get that, get that whole real sort of room filling sound going on and all that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah. It'd be fun stuff.
Nothing quite like that sound.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. So I'm looking forward to that.
You just need like 3 4-12s.
Yeah. I've got two here. I'm not sure I can really justify having a third. Right now I've got a 4-12 with 1-12s flanking.
That works. Yeah, that works.
Yeah, so it's it's coming together. Just need a few more pieces, then I'm going to start kind of mocking up a pedal board and just start throwing some stuff in there and see how it goes.
Yeah,
sounds good. So we got that. The other box that we did that's officially out is this thing, the multi box, and this is just a sort of a MIDI through box, but basically if you've got a MIDI controller and you got a whole ton of pedals that have MIDI inputs, especially ones that have TRS inputs, which are common on pedals these days, they don't have the 5-pin MIDI so much anymore. And so
that converts from regular MIDI to TRS MIDI to MIDI. Is it the Mini too? Also the Mini?
It is. It's one in, and then it's got three like normal MIDI outs. You can fan out, and then it's got four quarter inch, TRS MIDI. So it doesn't do the Mini. You have to convert it down, but it does at least get you to quarter inch TRS, and then it's configurable inside for all the unfortunately the official MIDI standard on how to do TRS came out years after people were already doing it. And so there's four different ways at least to do awesome. Yeah, it's so we can, so basically I'm playing with the jumpers inside. You can work with all the different models and all that. And that was just becoming a sort of a pain point for our customers about how to get all the stuff interfaced. And so we just wanted something that all kind of tied it all together. So we got that as well.
That's good. It also functions well as a mini through box and different things like that. So
yeah, exactly. And it does more. It's even like a lot of our MIDI controllers are phantom power capable. It can inject phantom power in there if you do a 7-pin cable. And then our stuff does the sort of the bidirectional MIDI trick using the extra two wires for the other direction. And so that also lets you combine that. So I just took like everything I could do basically. And that's why we call it the multi-box, because it just kind of just tried to put everything in there and kind of just make it sort of a Swiss Army knife of MIDI stuff. And yeah,
right.
Couldn't call it that without being sued, but you know, it is the Swiss Army knife of MIDI stuff. So
can you guys hear me okay?
You're really low in volume.
Yeah, you are low now.
I am low on volume.
Yeah, a little lower than you were before.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I'm having some technical issues all of a sudden.
It's in the air.
Hang on. I think I know what happened.
I can't wait to figure out mine.
Can you hear me a little more now?
Well, now you're distorting.
Yeah, now you're clipping.
Okay. All right. How's that?
There we go. We're back to
speak a little bit here.
Hello, hello.
Yeah, that's working.
Okay. I don't know what happened. My computer just suddenly like froze on me. And so I lost a lot of super chats. So I actually can't show them on the screen, but I have them up on my screen. So from Kev8055, he wants to know, Dave, I bought a BE100 in the UK made for 230 volts, 50 hertz. I'm about to move to South Korea for work where it's 220, 60 hertz. Can I run the amp with wall voltage or should I run a variac of some sorts?
I mean, you could run it, but you can also which it's an older BE100?
Didn't say. It just says BE100.
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter what one it is. There is a 220 tap inside, so you could switch it for 220. It's changing one wire, so it shouldn't be that big of a deal to do literally one wire.
And he said he bought it was
depending on if it's an older amp or a newer amp, I'd have to tell you where.
Would it give you a clue? He said it's a BE100 in the UK made for 230 volt, 50 hertz.
It's actually set at 240 volt. But
oh,
so you're already running 10 volts under currently now. Because here's the thing that I've discovered: 230 volts. Not really. Most places that are 230 volts are not 230 volts. They're more like 235 or 236, and or even close to 240 when they're supposed to be 230. Or then there's Australia, which is 240, but often is 248 or 246, which is just gnarly.
Crazy.
So as we tend to set most everything that goes to Europe, unless it's a specific 220 country, to 240 volts, because I'd rather be a little under than over. Over doesn't sound very good, first off, and not to mention it's pretty hard on components and things.
Okay.
So, yes, if you give me more specifics in an email, I could always guide you on how to change it or have someone change it for you.
Okay. GVB Junior, don't see your question. If I find it later in the super chat, I'll ask it. But if not, thank you. Appreciate it. Paul Crane, question for Dave and Ron. Have you spoken to Pete Cornish about boards and things? Was he influential in the pedal board rig business?
I've never spoken with him, but actually I would love to.
Yeah, same here.
I would love to have him on the show. You should probably reach out and see if we can get him on the show. I mean, I think he's, you know, he's in the latter stages of his life. So I think, you know, is I think it would be good to get him on.
That's what I was going to say. Is he still working?
He's still working, from what I understand.
Oh, cool. Yeah,
I mean, definitely influential for sure. I mean,
yeah. I mean, his stuff is crazy. I mean, if you open up custom pedal boards that he's made in his wood enclosures and you see what went into the construction of these, it's incredible. It's first of all, it's beautiful. It's all military wiring inside, and it's crazy. It's awesome.
Isn't he like doing like adjusting like impedances at like every stage down the line and things like
that? Yeah. So, I mean, his big thing, from what I understand, so if you just look at a, from what I understand, the big thing is keeping the impedances the same. So in other words, if you have a loop, there's a buffer that pre-send of the loop, it goes to a pedal. And the pedal comes in, but then it hits another buffer that's at 1 meg input impedance, or like a 1 meg, like an amp input impedance. So every time that this is happening, it's just like the pedal is seeing straight into the amp.
Mm-hmm.
So otherwise, well, you know, let's say you have a CE1 chorus, an original CE1 chorus. The input impedance on that, if it's been slightly modified, is probably 50K. So your pedal, whatever it might be, let's say it's a phase 90, which can't drive 50K really. You know, you have the phase 90 now going either into the amp, or if you put the other pedal in the chain, it's going into a different input impedance. So it's changing the preceding pedal on how it sounds. That just puts it in a nutshell. Makes a lot of sense, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a consistency of switching and how the pedal is going to sound.
Mm. Yeah.
One could say there may be too many buffers then. But I don't know if that's really the case. It's not really too many buffers. It's not on, might be too many buffers.
Stephen Douglas says, I like Pat's Soldano tone a little more than his current Wizards.
I don't know how you can tell with three guitars going at once.
Yeah, it's probably true. Although in that live show that they just recently did, debuting Josh Fries, who, by the way, is amazing.
Of course.
Great player.
I've known Josh since he was 15.
Really?
Yeah.
We should have him on then. Jesus.
That might be interesting.
That would be cool.
He's a funny guy.
First, he'd be our first drummer.
I wouldn't know what to talk about, but you might.
I would. Yeah. I can ask him a bunch of questions. Yeah. I was impressed, man. I really was. I was like, oh, shit, this guy's the real
He's one of the best drummers in the – I mean, like, literally one of the best drummers there is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, for a kind of a rock drummer, that's a punk or rock drummer, like badass.
Yeah, and he's got amazing power.
I worked with him on record. I mean, I watched him work in the studio with the Offspring on a record I worked on with them, with Brendan O'Brien. And I mean, I've known Josh forever. Just watching him cut, you know, they would do four takes of every song. And after the very first take, Brendan would be in the control room. Brendan would go, well, that's perfect. I'm going to just make him do it three more times. just in case one's better than the other.
But at least you got the perfect one.
And then I literally watched him, Brendan, tell him, you know, this one song. Can you, in the verses, hit on the outside of the snare drum? You know, on the outside edge, not the center. And then when you hit the chorus, I want you to hit center. And you watch him change instantly like a machine, you know, to that. And It's when you're that. I mean, he's recorded on so many records that you don't know he recorded.
Yeah.
You know,
he's talented.
First Puddle of Mud record was all Josh playing drums.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah. The one with all the hits on it.
Hmm.
Yeah. And a million other ones that you would never know.
Wow.
He played with Sting. He played with Nine Inch Nails. He played with Perfect Circle. Well, he started Perfect Circle with Billy. Mm. I mean.
Yeah. But where I was going with that was Chris Shiflett. Was he using his Freedmans for that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because they didn't show him in the video. I kept waiting to show to see his rig. But they kept showing, like, the Voxes, which I think were...
The Freedmans are right next to the Voxes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Pete Thorne just showed me a clip of a club show that they did. And there's four 4x12s across the club stage. Chris is taking up half the stage, literally.
that's quite a rig. I've got fortunate enough to be able to go up to their studio a few couple months ago. And it's a lot of stuff. it's pretty impressive.
That's cool. Awesome. Yeah, if anybody's going to have it, they should have it.
Yeah, absolutely. Sound.
Ray Mitchell, still have my MIDI. Why not?
That was our MIDI controlled ABY switch. Also, something that if people ask for it enough, may see the light of day once again.
Well, the nice thing about that is it had the phase flip.
Yeah, that was something that was a real surprise that we had a manual phase flip button on there, and then like guys with wanted to switch between multiple channel switchers, basically talked me into like having a MIDI controlled phase flip because different, you know, when you switch channels on amps, it would change the phase relationship. And so I guess there's probably a space for something like that. I don't know if anything else out there does that still. So it's,
I don't think so.
Yeah. So, okay.
I've done it with a phase reverse transformer in a loop of a switcher.
Okay.
You know, that just flops the phase. Yeah, that's a big problem that a lot of people don't really know. So generally speaking, on a channel switching amplifier, the channels aren't all in phase with each other because it depends on how many gain stages. So let's say you have one channel that's a Fender based. So that's in phase, meaning what goes in comes out of the preamp. That's in phase. But then often overdrive channel, like say a BE channel of my amp would be out of phase with that. And then if you add the HBE, then that flips the phase back the other way again. So, you know, depending on what two amps you're using and what channels you're using or combining will be all out of phase with each other. So you have to figure out what's in phase and how to set it. And then you have to go kind of the great pains to set this up properly.
Yeah. Our PVC-10 switcher will do that. It has the switchable phase at the output, but that's the only thing currently that we have that will do that.
Jamie Brown says, "Hey Ron, I had the red GT22. Sherry said I beat out Alex Lightson and John Petrucci by minutes."
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, we did a small number of special color ones way back when, but actually John Petrucci was like probably the first, I mean, like one of the like very first, I think he actually even got an early one. See, I guess we must have had something online where we showed it, and we did show like an early prototype at NAMM one year, I think 2011. And Maddie, his tech, is like, "We got to talk about this. This is really cool. John really likes this." And so it was cool. There was it was nice because we had them. We had a lot of good feedback on tuning it and kind of like what they needed. And so a lot of ideas went into that. And we've been updating it over the years, and everything from we had to figure out a way to dim the displays for Nine Inch Nails because their lighting director was mad because all the LCDs were like shining up on the guy's legs, and you know, and so we listen to our customers, I guess, is what we're saying.
That's funny. Yeah. I gather your wife Sherry is behind the screen here.
Oh, there she. Oh, she's off in the other room.
She's watching.
She's making sure I don't say anything dumb.
Good luck. Come in and hit you with something.
she's just in the next room. She can come in. You might see me like get battered if I like give away any like new product secrets or something like that.
Oh, new product secrets are good sometimes.
Yeah, I did. I gave you the line mixer.
There you go. Stephen Douglas, what's great about the mini amp gizmo is I originally programmed it for my 5153 and didn't have to reprogram it for my Shiva and DSL combo.
Yeah. That's cool. We tried to line it up so that the one button always is set up to control channel one and the two is channel two and five is the loop. Anyway, so yeah, we tried to make it work that way. It was pretty hard because every amp is different, but glad to hear it worked for you.
Cool.
And some of them are very difficult. Like some of the Fender. What was it, the Supersonic or not?
The Supersonic and the Hot Rods. I know why they did it. They basically wanted to have be able to just use a regular guitar cord to connect to a two button foot switch, which is normally electrically not. Just you're trying to put two switches on one wire and it's just not going to work normally, so they did some tricks with diodes and running AC down there to remove the top half or the bottom half of the signal coming down. Pretty clever. And then the Supersonic had multiple channels, so it would like cut it off at different levels. So but yeah, them Mesa is pretty famous for doing some pretty crazy foot switches.
And they applied it. They also applied it to the newer 5153s also.
Oh, they do the same thing?
It's a single wire.
Okay. I haven't looked at it.
Four button foot switch, single wire.
Okay. And just a single, not TRS, but like a regular.
And all of them are light up and everything.
Wow. That's interesting. That's not so easy to do. But yeah, they might have used the same strategy for that. I haven't.
Sure, they did Fender. So
yeah, that's true. They could just reuse. But yeah, it's nice that the people there is no standard. Well, nice for only one reason that there's no standard for foot switches, because that just kind of gave us our opening to sell this stuff. But if it all made sense, they wouldn't need an amp gizmo or anything like that.
Right.
Maybe we wouldn't be here.
Mad Max, where did Reseda green color come from on the newer Friedman guitars? Will it fade to yellow over time?
Where did it come from? It was a color green that originally Grover had that we named it Reseda Green. I'm not sure why we even named it Reseda Green. It's a city. It's an area here in the San Fernando Valley. I have no idea why we named it that color. Will it fade? I'm not sure. I haven't seen it fade.
Is that on newer ones that are being built, or is that the legacy Grover ones?
Well, I mean, it originally came from Grover, but I think maybe we're doing some of those. That would be on a Maple Top guitar, probably, which would be Grover guitars.
Mm. Okay.
Unless I could be wrong.
Okay. Ron, there's a Cameron head on Reverb. This is Roger Datt. Thanks so much for the super chat, Roger. There's a Cameron head on Reverb listed at 10 grand. It has RJM logo for MIDI switching. Can you speak on that project working with Mark?
Wow. That was 10 grand, huh?
Yeah, I know something about this.
Interesting.
This was the Brad King era.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. For sure, if it had your logo on it.
Yeah, I don't remember my logo being on stuff, but okay. I've done a lot of stuff for people.
I think it said MIDI by RJM.
Okay.
Something.
Yeah, RJM definitely. Yeah, I mean, I definitely worked with Mark and just, yeah, did the MIDI circuit for it. I mean, I did the MIDI circuit for the Synergy amps too. So, and you know, for a while there was doing it for a lot of companies, and yeah, so it's you know, made sense to kind of put this stuff in the amps and you know, not have to worry about an external box. But wow, 10 grand for that, huh? Interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty ambitious. I wonder if he'll get it.
Yeah.
It's funny, I'm looking on Reverb right now. I don't see it.
Oh, maybe it's gone.
If he won a 97 anniversary SLP, Cameron, for 7,500, but I don't see it.
7,500, huh?
Yeah. 97 anniversary SLP, Mark Cameron.
So basically I need to like become impossible to get a hold of, hold people's amps for 10,000 years and then disappear off the face of the earth in order to get that kind of money, huh?
Well, I mean, look, it worked for Dumble.
Right. Yeah, don't answer people back.
It's got to be unobtainium and like make them, you know, sign really, really odd contracts and things like that. About like,
never, yeah, exactly.
You become completely aloof.
Yep.
And
yeah, throw all the customer service out the window.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, isn't that what Bogner's doing?
Sorry. Maybe.
Let's see. What do we got here? Dave,
there's one right under the one you just did that's Sloppy Fingers.
Oh, I meant to do that one. Hey guys, still loving your show. Question for fellow left-hander Mark. Is a Gibson Explorer close enough tonally to a Destroyer? The struggle is definitely real for us left-handers. That's absolutely true. And thanks so much from Ottawa, Canada. So I've never played a Destroyer because I've never found a Destroyer in left-handed. So yeah, I don't think they've ever. So I can't compare the tone. Destroyer was made out of what? It was a kind of a fake. Yeah.
So Japanese sandalwood, which is sort of like an ash.
Okay. So it's definitely different than an all mahogany, you know.
A little more cutting, a little more in your face, a little brighter.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So it would be different.
Yeah.
For sure.
I think so. This is definitely, it's a little bit warmer. It's more like a Les Paul, but even a little bit warmer because it doesn't have any maple on it. At least that's how I see it. And thank you. Appreciate it. Let's see. I think this was the one. Has MIDI changed over the years? Aren't they? We're still waiting for like MIDI 2.0.
Yeah. Yeah. How has MIDI changed over the years? Like almost not at all, but, but you know, it's like what, 40 years now. But yeah, I've been paying attention to the MIDI 2.0 thing and, you know, it's happening and it's, you know, it's starting to show up, but I mean, is it going to make it into pedals anytime soon? I don't know. There's a lot of, a lot required of the manufacturers to do it. You know, it's like, it was pretty easy to do, you know, old MIDI, but it'll be a challenge. I mean, we're certainly on board and, you know, it's going to happen. There's a couple of our newer products actually have it in there, even though it's, you know, the standard isn't even really finalized yet. But it will be cool because it kind of brings it into the modern age with, you know, the ability to, you know, where the MIDI controller just, instead of like having to program in, like, well, I have to send it, you know, CC11 to control the volume on this thing, or I have to send CC102 to, you know, you have to look stuff up and, you know, do all this configuration yourself. The the ideal and the intent of the whole MIDI 2.0 thing is like you just plug your stuff into your controller and you hit a button and it just kind of talks to everything and just figures out what's there. And, you know, kind of where there's a more of a two-way communication between the products, and you can just kind of, you know, the pedal will say like, well, you can control gain and it's this controller, and you can control volume, and it, you know, so there's a whole bunch of just way more complicated, but hopefully in service of the user and all that. And, you know, so hopefully it's going to happen, you know, and make it into the, you know, all the way to the guitar world. It's, you know, the MIDI world is still, you know, very keyboard centric and all that. And we kind of just, you know, are kind of off in our little corner in the guitar world, using just a little bit of what MIDI is. But yeah, we'll see. I'll try to do my part on that and try to make it happen. Because I think it'll be a lot better in the long run if we can get people, you know, get all this stuff talking together better, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I assume if they do come out with the 2.0, it'll be backwards compatible.
Yeah, definitely it's backwards compatible, because there's a whole bunch of stuff, and that's probably a lot of the reason why it's taking so long is, you know, they've been working on this for years and years, and it's hard. So yeah, no one wants to abandon all the old stuff, of course, for good reason. And they just want to keep building on top of it and, you know, and doing things like, you know, still supporting the old MIDI cables, but like they want to start moving people more to like using USB and, you know, faster transports, because it's, you know, MIDI is like, you know, shockingly slow. It doesn't matter for what little we're using it for, you know, turn this on, turn this off. But, you know, compared to what a modern system would use, you know, like a computer system, it's you know, kind of laughably slow and simple. And so it'll be good to bring it into the modern world for sure.
Cool. Greg Roberts tune. Is there a link to Ron's website or channel? Yeah. So you go to rjmmusic.com. I'll put the link in our video also, but go to rjmmusic.com and you'll check out all his products.
Check it out.
Let's see. Quentin James, what's up, man? Having these two kids on YouTube is just YouTube gold for us guitar players. Thank you. Oh, cool. Awesome. Doug Thacker, thank you. Dave, can you talk about your EVH Boss pedal experience? Got mine last week, and it's obviously awesome. Mark and Dave, thanks for all you contribute. Thank you.
Sure. I mean, I was hired as a consultant to just make sure that it sounded and operated like it was supposed to, you know. And you know, we were since I built Ed's rig, that's why I was hired. So we were A-ing it directly to his original STE 3000 delays with a PBC six, by the way.
Yeah, nice. Nice.
I was using that to just take the two things completely in and out of the chain, you know, so we could listen in real time and switch be back and forth between them instantly. And, you know, in the end, it sounds the same, if not slightly better. So, I mean, like shockingly so.
Cool. Yeah,
so it's the real deal.
I just got it. I just got the box the other day, and I'm running it into just the loop of my BE.
Yeah.
And I need to set the settings. The levels are too high. But I'm gonna hook it up this weekend. The wet dry.
The levels are too high.
When I hit a repeat, the delay is too. You know.
Oh yeah, you just need to adjust the mix.
Yeah. Exactly. Because when I was hitting the output button, like I would do on my SDE 3000, it would normally lower the output of the delay, right?
Well, you want to adjust the mix in that.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have to go into the actually edit settings.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I haven't done that yet. So, but yeah, I'm going to mess with it. I was messing with it today. It sounds great.
Oh, yeah. It's incredible, Sonny. I mean, it really is. It really captured every nuance. If you watch the boss video, the official one where Yoshi is talking about what they did, and I mean, every little nuance of the original, they modeled and captured. Even the audio path, they modeled it, so to speak, so it sounds like the original audio path, you know? So it wasn't just, you know, make something that sounds close. It really replicates it exactly, which is super cool.
Yeah.
Did a great job.
Now, can you talk about, I'm curious, can you talk about, and if you can, I understand, but the reason why they went with the approach of 3 amps as a wet, dry, wet option, was that kind of to sell maybe 3 katanas? So they,
it's not really that. It's just whatever you know, power amp option or, you know, whatever you want.
But most people aren't going to run it with 3 amps.
You know? Well, if they want to do truly the way, you know, Ed did it, then it was, well, it's a power amp and an amp.
Right, it's a power amp. And an amp.
So you're just using the power sections of the other amps.
Right, but you don't really need, if you have a stereo power amp, you don't need.
Yeah, no, you don't need it.
Right.
Okay. You do have to be mindful, and we kind of thought of this after the fact, unfortunately. You do have to be mindful of the phase of the wet cabs. So how this pedal works is you plug a guitar into it. The send on the back of that unit goes into the front of your main amp. The send of the effects loop then goes to the return of the little loop, shall we say, on the back of the pedal. And then the dry out of the pedal goes to the return of your amplifier. And in this configuration, you can use, there's a noise suppressor in there that is triggering off the input. So it's like really works really well. And there's a volume pedal control and some stuff like that. But then there's 2 other wet outs, and if you take that to a power amp. So what you're getting the signal off the preamp send of the loop of your amplifier to feed the wet.
Right.
So the phase relationship can be a little weird. It could be, you know, it could be out of phase.
So how do you fix that?
You could be out of phase because you don't know, like your power section that you're coming back into of your head could be out of phase with the power amps. Because you're taking off the preamp, it's not like before, like when you do a wet, dry, wet, normally use a line out box. So the amp just goes there. So the phase of that is feeding the power amp, you know, so there's not generally an issue. How do you get around that? How do you fix that? Well, you can flip your speaker cables. There's several ways you can.
Oh, I see.
You could go about this, but it's going to come up a little bit, maybe.
With the 3 amp situation.
Or power amps, it's going to come up a little bit. I mean, any kind of elaborate setup has things that have to be dealt with. There's almost no conceivable way that you're not going to have issues somewhere that have to be solved.
It's always
we tried, but you know, no.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I mean,
I wasn't there early on in the development. I was just there at the very end, just as a consultant, just to look over the final product, basically.
Gotcha. Modern Vintage, Dave and Ron, the Radial Twin City is buffered, but the Leo SGOS ABY is not. Is either superior sonically for running 2 amps simultaneously? Thanks.
I'd go with the buffered one if I were you.
Yep.
Because, I mean, if you're running, let's say you're running cables, a 20-foot cable into your, shall we say, leaded box, and then a 20-foot cable out, guess what's going to happen? You're running through a 40-foot guitar cable. I mean, unless you have a pedal board shoved in front of the Lely box, then that's probably buffered anyway. Or if you have a tube screamer or something sitting in front of it, then it's buffered. Then it will work fine. But just get the Twin City. It'll for sure that works well.
Cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's up, Blade Hudson? How you doing, man? Thanks for watching. Let's see. What commercial manufacturer make the most similar components required? I'm not sure what that means.
Yes, yeah, similar to what, I guess.
I'm confused on that one.
Yep, sorry.
Can you clarify?
Dave, what is the best way to run 3 to 6 amps at once?
Oh, hell. okay, sure. Here's what you do. You get one of Ron's effect gizmos. You take sends of 6 loops with isolation transformers on line with every single amp, or maybe not one. Depends on where you're going to put this effect gizmo. So it could be maybe 1 amp isn't isolated and the other 5 are. And turn all those loops on, and there you go. There's a splitter. Transformer isolated splitter, 6 ways.
Yep, you can turn on any combination you like.
Or you could use the PVC-6.
Yeah, I mean,
do the same configuration, but you still need those isolation transformers.
Yeah, I mean, any of our switchers will do the same thing, where if you only plug into the sends, then basically the signal it's no longer like a send and return loop. It's basically just a splitter. And so each one of those sends can be turned on or off, and any of them that are on get the same signal, you know, the incoming guitar signal, and you can just use that to feed as many amps as you want. And yeah, as Dave says.
So yeah, if you use the six, one is your grounded line. That's the one that's going to one of your amps. And then the other 5 would have isolation transformers.
Yeah. And the least expensive way, we have a mini effect gizmo X, and that's got 6 loops. And so you can run that to your 6 amps. And that's the smallest and least expensive, and it would still do the job.
Mm-hmm. Great. Braxel, Dave, what is your thoughts on products like ToneX and your amp sales? I'm curious. Do not want to see amp makers slow down or stop making amps.
Well, my thought always is if amp makers slow down and stop making amps, then what are all the modeling products going to copy? Just old amps forever? I mean, you know, what are they going to? I mean, the ToneX is actually quite a good unit. You know, it does a really good job. But here's the thing. I often find guitar players don't want it to be that complicated. You know, pages. I mean, I'm sure everyone out there knows this. They've tried modeling stuff, and you're sitting there messing with your sound forever. You're not doing any playing. You know, you're just sitting there trying to make it better and trying to make it better and trying to make it better. Does it ever really get better? I mean, you can get it really good, but you're still thinking it can get better. And you're just going and going and just programming, and you're never playing guitar, you know?
Yeah, it can become the rabbit hole, that's for sure.
And I don't know. I mean, the older I get, I guess it depends on what age you are, too. The older I get, the less I want to fuck around with all the shit. I mean, to be honest, I want to plug it in and get a sound fast.
Yeah.
And and quickly and keep it easy, you know, just keep it simple. I mean, like, okay, I like switching. I love all that. But, you know, I don't want to page through 150 things to do one simple task. You know, it's just awful.
Yeah.
It's just awful. Because I always tell people with Axe FX's or things, like, oh, yeah, I just needed to turn the gain up a little. Hold on 1 second. Wait, where is that again? Where is it? Oh, wait, it's on the 5th page over two clicks that way and five clicks up, and oh, there it is, finally. Meanwhile, the whole band is looking at you like, oh, really?
I mean, it is amazing how far it's come, and you know.
Yeah, I mean, technology is great. Technology is great, but you know, there's something to be said for a pen and paper too.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, I use technology all the time. I use my computers all the time, but you know, when I'm doing stuff quick, I use a pen and paper. I write it down, make notes on a piece of paper, not in my phone. You know, I just find it's quicker to reference and it's faster, you know, keep a little note. Even when we do rigs here, we scribble out a rig diagram in a notebook, and guess what? That notebook stays around and we can analog, look it back up again, you know, and it's sometimes things are just easier. The old way is sometimes better, you know?
Yeah. Not saying always. Or we're just old.
You're not going to design circuit boards the old way, you know, but I think stuff gets overly complicated at times.
Personally, I don't think modelers are going to be the death of tube amps. I think tubes are going to be the death of tube amps.
That could be. Yeah. That could be. The thing is, coming up with products that might merge some technology with some tube amps.
I mean, it's already happening with like impulse responses and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, and maybe there's things coming out in the near future that you know, we've hinted at before.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So keep an eye on it.
Cool. HDM 1990, Dave, how different is the Steve Stevens V2 and the BE100 Deluxe? Looking for a brighter with that Marshally high mids thing. Which of those two would you say is more raw in the mids and the high mids?
I mean, you might like the SS slightly more, maybe. Are they similar? Yes, the DNA is similar. The circuit is slightly different. I mean, I don't know. Is brown hair different than dark brown hair? The SS is probably the favorite amp, my favorite amp I make. The SS V2. I think it might be. I mean, I like them all, but there's something about that one I like. I think what I like about that is the simplicity of it. You know, there's no switches. Minimal. There's one bright switch on the clean channel and one fat switch on the back, and that's the only switches on the amp.
Mm.
Other than a power and standby, but, you know, I'm not counting that. You know, the other amp has a lot of bells and whistles that you can do all sorts of things with, but you do have to know how to switch the switches to make them do those things. You know, I tend to like simple with amps, kind of. I'm kind of a one-channel guy, personally. But, you know, I might do some limited runs of a Dave's favorite or Dave's choice. I don't know what I'm going to call it yet.
Hmm.
Some limited run things in very small quantities that might be fun. That just literally, I'm just making the amp for myself and then hopefully someone will want it.
Right.
This is my optimum thing that I want, you know.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like amp of the month.
Maybe special reserve or something.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
Geesbury, is it Daphne Blue?
You know,
or Murnia Blue? Never heard of that.
Or
Bahama Blue.
Maybe Bahama Blue. I do not remember.
Anyway, we got one more. Tide Pool Blue. Never heard of
that one. Man, you guys got more colors than I know.
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
First one I saw was like, is that Sonic Blue?
Oh, Sonic Blue. That.
Yeah, it's definitely not Sonic. I know it's not one of the usual suspects.
See, I think it might be Daphne Blue. That's what I'm thinking. I've heard of that before. But.
It's blue, people.
It's blue. Blue with a little maybe it's green. Blue. Maybe.
It's fucking blue. Charles G., thanks for the super chat. Dave, any update on guitars and who will be working with you on them? I think it's Rock and Roll Relics, right?
For years now, we've been working with Billy Rowe from Rock and Roll Relics. Guitars didn't go away ever. They were just produced at a much slower rate.
And they're not on your website, though.
They're not on the website because we just redid the website and we had taken down the old information and wanted to put up new information, which we need to do, which we have the pictures for now, which we just haven't done it. But we're shipping guitars.
By the way.
To dealers. So
oh, you're shipping guitars.
Kind of shipping now a lot.
So if someone wants to go get, so the guitars that you're making are not by custom anymore. It's just like they're
not doing custom orders currently. No, we're making whatever is available at dealers is what you can buy, you know, or eventually maybe we'll offer some on our own website. And what's available is what's available.
No more custom shop kind of stuff.
You know, at least maybe not right now. I mean, the problem with custom shop is anyone can order anything. And can you imagine how that bogs down production? I mean, oh, I want this fret. Oh, can you give me a flame maple neck? Oh, I want this radius. Oh, I want, talk to John Sir about this. You know, oh, can you make it this way? Can you make it that way? Can you do this? Can you do that? And like every guitar is like a one-off. I mean, it's, and it's, that's crazy.
It becomes a nightmare.
Highly expensive. Actually, making guitars like in the U.S. now is highly expensive. I mean, it's just, there's no cheap way to do it anymore. You know, that's why all the lower priced guitars are made overseas. And even those aren't that low anymore.
No. The Epiphone came out with a flying V. It was, you know, like a 57 or 58 V, $1,300 new for an Epiphone.
Yeah, that's normal. And it's good.
Oh yeah, it'll be great.
It's good. So
exactly.
I just can't aim. You know, people don't generally understand that, like, okay, if you have dealers and distributors and different things like that, guess what? You know, a store, okay, you get a price at a store, okay, the store is getting X percentage. Then you know, so they get, there's a huge percentage for the store. If you had a distributor, we don't, but if you did, they get a percentage. And you know, and then it costs a lot to do it. It's just not so simple. It's not just the price of what no one ever understands is it's not just the labor to make it and the price of materials. That's not what it costs to make. Well, what about your building, your overhead, your accountant, your insurance? If you're a bigger company, your
marketing.
HR department, your marketing, your videos that you have to pay for, the list goes on and on.
Employees.
And on. Employees. Insurance. Employee, workman comp insurance. So if you make them in your basement and it's just you making them, then I suppose it's your labor, the parts, and that's what it costs, so to speak. But you're just not. It's not the way it is.
Yep, it's true. All right, we got one more guest, Miami Blue.
That might be it. I would have to talk to someone else to confirm on that. But that sounds, that's like the most promising name, because I knew it was something I had never heard before in reference to a Strat or anything.
John Johnson Blue?
Miami Vice Blue.
Miami Vice Blue. There you go.
Sure. Let's see. Cecil Music. Dave, is there much of a sound difference between a back-loaded and front-loaded 4x12 cab?
From what I understand, there is, but I've never, ever, ever even considered using a front-loaded cab, so... I've never done that experiment, and I don't want to.
Sounds good.
I like my cabs. People seem to like my cabs, so let's leave it.
I think, I think a cab sounds great. Stephen Mikkel One, thank you. Can Dave put a tight control on a Marshall Shredmaster pedal?
No. No.
Yeah, you'd have to go to a.
That's pedal. A whole. No, I'm not modifying the pedal. Sorry.
L. Scott Music, San Diego and San Jose are a little far to go see. Any chance of an LA dealer in the future?
We don't do a lot of dealers in the US. We find that we just working directly with customers is a lot more our speed. We had a lot of trouble with having a dealer in between. And so really, you know, we pretty much just sell to our rig builder friends, such as Dave.
Hey.
So actually having actual stores, I mean, we have Guitar Sanctuary in Texas, which does you no good, admittedly, but you know, just because they happen to have, you know, a rig building shop as part of it. And so they, you know, they kind of share that. So I guess the short answer is not any plans unless, you know,
Lauren, what do you want to see? I mean, I know this person. Okay. What do you want to see? So yeah. That's the question, really.
If anyone talks to
Dave, they just buy it. They work great.
He often has some of our stuff in there for one reason or another for some of these buildings. So
absolutely.
There you go.
Let's see. Dave, thanks, Modern Vintage again. Dave, are A&S, Dragon, and other major road case brands equal, or do you prefer one over the others after seeing them all while building so many rigs?
Well, there's certain things I go for racks, for instance, I mostly use, A&S cases, A&S Encore, actually, they're merged, for a Chris Craft style rack. That's what mostly I use. Chris Craft style rack, stems way back when a guy named Stintz used to make them. A Swedish guy named Stintz used to make Chris Craft, and eventually he sold the rights, so to speak, to A&S. And they have continued and made changes to that over the years. Other than that, I use Dragon Case because Tim's a friend of mine. For years ago, he used to work at A&S Cases and several other case companies, and he has his own little brand that he makes cases and trunks and different things for. So it really sort of depends on what kind of case I'm going for. But yes, they're equally as good as each other. Just like specifically Chris Craft racks, I'd go for A&S.
Okay. BMO, question for Ron. Can we see or hear the new Overture OD pedal?
You don't want to hear my crappy playing, but you can see it. And actually I'm actually happy to talk about that, because it's a little bit of a departure for us, and, you know, actually doing something that actually, you know, my whole thing has been, you know, trying to make stuff that doesn't sound like anything, and just kind of stays out of the way. So this was my, this came at a really good time where I was just like, I just want to do this. I just need to do something different, and just kind of play with that stuff. And I had the circuit kind of coming together, and right when the pandemic hit was like the time where I was really wanting to like start really kind of playing with it and fine tuning it. And so it was kind of fun in a twisted way, where I just kind of sat here, you know, the world was locked down, and I just kind of sat with the, you know, and just, you know, tweaked capacitors and diodes. And it was an interesting thing, because prior to this, I've always been like kind of an amp gain guy, and so this was a real eye opener for like using, you know, simple amp and like really kind of studying for those who don't know. So the Overture, it's a fully analog pedal signal path, that is, but it's programmable and MIDI controllable. All the parameters are controllable. It's an overdrive based on the Tube Screamer and all of its, or some of its many descendants. There's six modes on there. One is just kind of classic, and then there's like something that's kind of along the one that kind of opens up the headroom, kind of like love pedal, eternity kind of pedal. And we've got one that does MOSFET clipping mode, and then we've got other ones that kind of add in more tone controls and things like that. And then we also did I did two of my own modes. One is like clean boost, just by taking out the clipping and adjusting some of that, and then had a hard clipping mode as well. And so anyway, so it was a fun project. I would like to do more pedals in the future and all that, but it was cool. And I'm you know, proud of what came out of our first attempt at it, because it was, good fun project and big learning experience for sure. I all of a sudden they're now all, my head is now full of pedal schematics because of this, just kind of learning all that and kind of, got new appreciation for the old school pedal into an amp kind of thing.
Right. That sounds interesting. I'll have to check it out. I'm sure I imagine that there's going to be videos on YouTube.
Yeah. What's up?
Pete did one.
Yeah. Pete did one for us, and we've had a bunch of others. Our buddy, Paul Jackson Jr. Did some really nice videos for it. He's a big fan of it. And yeah, so they, right when we did the launch on that, we had a bunch of videos that are, you can find on YouTube. But yeah, it's fun and a good one for sure.
Awesome. Simon Hosford. What's up, Simon? How are you, man? Greetings from Melbourne, Australia. Mark, Dave, and Ron, always a pleasure to listen to you live. Thank you.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
Well, Sherry's right on it here in the chat.
What's she doing? She's
answering questions and videos.
She's the other half that I couldn't do it without her anymore. It's she handles all the stuff that I cannot or don't want to.
That's great. That's great that she helps. That's great.
Yeah, we turned into quite a team. She kind of got dragged, you know, basically unwillingly into this. Has become a full on partner. She is all in now. She can talk. She does all the parts ordering and all that stuff. So she can, you know, despite not having any of that background, she can talk resistors and capacitors and all that stuff now. So it's pretty fun. And we've been working together all this time, and we still like each other. So that's pretty.
That's pretty good.
Pretty notable. Right
there. Yeah, you live together and work together. Like each other.
Somehow it's worked all these years.
Hey, Beast FU, what's up, man? He's still on his meds, he said. So his question came through. remember Beast?
Yeah.
Yeah, just want to understand why people say that Freedman amps are dark or polished compared to a Marshall. Is it something you consciously went for?
Well, I don't think that's necessarily true. What Marshall is the big question? What Marshall are you comparing it to? If you're comparing it to an 800, yeah, it might be a little smoother. If you're comparing it with a Plexi amp, not at all. In fact, I could do blindfold tests with you where you would not know the difference. So I always say, "What Marshall? What's a Marshall? What are you comparing it to?" You know, I was completely comparing it to a Plexi 50-watt Marshall with a Variac. And those are smoother than you think. They have more compression than you think, you know. It's not like 800. Mm-hmm. So can it do that stuff? And over the years, I made them a lot brighter because people kept saying that. So I don't think now they're much different. With the J.K. Lee amp probably being the brightest and most aggressive.
Coxie 5150, thanks for the super chat. Late joining. Have we had your thoughts on the SDE3000 EVH? Yeah, we did discuss that. What should I set the uni gain on the pedal for BE50 Deluxe effects loop?
Plus negative 4? 10.
Negative 10.
Negative and, 10.
And we did talk about the SDE 3000 pedal.
It's a pedal level effects loop, so it's definitely negative 10.
Okay. Do you have? I mean, it's probably already set up that way, right?
I have no idea what it's set at.
Oh,
okay. You have to look at that.
Okay. I will. Let's see.
Because there's actually a level input level control, but there's also the basic switch that's plus 4, negative 10. So
okay.
There's some things you have to dial in with it, and it's many pages of things.
Gotcha. I'm waiting on my SDE3000. Is it good enough to use an outboard piece of gear in the studio? I don't see why not.
Yeah, it's great. Sure.
Let's see. Tone Talk, question for the group. In such a super saturated gear market, what do you three think is missing from the market or is yet to be done right? That's a good question.
Oh God. That's a very good question.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can come up with an answer on the spot.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing that came to mind is I thought about it and it's like, well, you know, there's gotta be things that, you know, could be done, you know, doing it the right way would be like great, but but because of price or whatever, you know, you'd sell like 10 of them or something like that.
And right, so there's probably sure.
there's some barrier to that. Now, can I come up with an example on the spot? Of course not, unfortunately, but you know, there's, you know, things are the way they are, you know, for, yeah, you know, you have to take in financial considerations and all that. And, you know,
yeah,
but I don't know. It's, missing for the market or yes, yeah, has yet to be done right. I mean, you know, we kind of mentioned, but I think that the, you know, the digital stuff, of course, is just going to keep improving, you know, whether it's ever going to really close the gap, you know, with the analog stuff, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it is super saturated and you have to kind of, you know, distinguish yourself from everyone else for sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. Like you talked about, you know, coming out with something different. Didn't Seymour Duncan just come out with like a switch?
Like, yes. A Bluetooth.
Oh, right. The pickup car switch?
Yeah, pickup switch thing. I mean, that's unique.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how useful it is, but it's unique.
No, right. Music Man did a guitar like that once. The Game Changer, I believe they called it.
Oh yeah.
Some years back, and it wasn't wireless, but it was basically MIDI controlled pickup switching, and I don't think that did well for them because it kind of disappeared after a while. But it was an interesting idea certainly, and it was, you know, kind of cool to, you know, have hands free switching and all that. But yeah, it's, I don't know. It's interesting to see how that one works.
And the reason why I bring up the Seymour Duncan pickup switcher thing is, or the Bluetooth thing is, because it sounds cool in theory, but I would never use it.
You know? No.
Yeah. So, Mr. Anderson, hey guys, Dave, what's your opinion on 6550 tubes? Scored a set of a quad of Wing C's for a good price and tried them on a YJM 100. I have, and I was not that impressed. Kind of unmusical and stiff to my ears. Thoughts?
Well, yeah, there's, I mean, like 6550 is a way stiffer tube for sure. Can be cool. Like, I mean, I've put some stuff in a B100 before that's pretty cool. But it's more brutal, stiffer for sure. Punchier, holds up to volume really well, you know.
My first gain monster amp was an Ingle Savage 120, and I believe that had a pair of 6550s in it. It was a cool amp.
those are actually cool amps. Yeah.
It was really, you know, it was kind of my introduction to the world of gain many years ago.
Dave, why did they hide the EVH settings on the SD3000 EVH?
What do you mean hide?
Yeah.
You can't... why did they hide what the settings are?
Yeah.
Because you don't need to know.
Well, they sell the non EVH SD3000, and clearly they don't want you to just be like, oh, well, if I have the settings, I don't need to spend the extra $100 on the EVH one.
And here's the funny thing about that whole EVH one versus the non-EVH one. So dealers we've talked to, it's a 10 to 1.
EVH over
the regular one. 10 to 1. So basically, they're not selling the regular one. Which is going to probably screw them.
Oh, wow.
Well, I mean, if you make a certain amount of production, you know.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I saw someone write on one of the videos, I don't get it, why these things aren't going to sell. I'm like, yeah, check Sweetwater Musician's Friend. Every one of them are sold out.
Yeah, what do you mean they're going to sell? I mean, of course they're going to sell. First of all, even if you plug it in mono into the loop of an amp, it sounds awesome.
Right.
It sounds awesome. I mean, there's some pages to go through and some architecture that you got to learn, you know, just like anything. But it's all learnable. It's fine. It's not as hard as, say, a Line 6 unit.
Vinny, what's up, buddy? Dave, could one theoretically run the WETS into a radial or similar pedal where the phase can be flipped and then into the power amps and just leave the radial on?
Sure. I mean, you could. You could, but I mean, it seems like dumb to get. You need two. You could do it. You could do it with a little Laylee box, too, you know, that has a phase switch on it. But I mean, those are expensive.
Yeah, rather than flipping the wire, right?
Yeah. You could actually put that, the send. Theoretically, you could flip the phase of the center amp if you put it on the send of the effects loop of the amp. And you could just flip the phase on one unit. I mean, you have to work it out. You'll know if it's out of phase. Trust me. It sounds like, sounds tiny. You know? Or, I mean, it's really easy, though. Vinny, I mean, you can do it easy. You can just make a little speaker cable adapter that just flips the phase of the speaker cable. It just flips the two wires of a speaker cable. It'll reverse the phase. I mean, you make cables.
Yeah, you can do it, buddy.
Yeah.
Modern Vintage, Dave and Mark, sincerely thank you for the show, for always answering my questions, for the education and insight. There's no other resource like this. Oh, awesome. Yeah, I really appreciate it. We plan on doing it for a while. Let's see.
Till we drop dead.
Yeah. Pretty much. Let's see. Just want to make sure we get to all the questions here.
Try-in amps. Dave, your high watt is still one of my top faves, along with my DR504. Stevie. Well, that's good. Does sound good. Love it.
Trevor, Dave, just received my Runt 20 to go along with my twin sister. Wow, nice dual amp tone. Awesome.
Cool, awesome. Glad you like it.
Paul Guitars, any update on your Freeman Boxish top boost?
They're coming. Leave me alone.
Lauren Minnelli says, hey, look, it's Ron Minnelli.
Kids are harassing me now.
That's funny. How old are the kids now?
Twins that are 18, and then I've got a 21-year-old, and so I'm sassy.
I remember when the twins were little.
Oh yeah, yeah. We dragged them to your shop once, and they kind of had to sit in the corner and be annoyed for a while we talked shop.
That's a little scary how time flies.
Yeah, literally high school graduation is next week. So, yeah.
That's same good. Here. They're almost out of the house, right?
No.
Yeah. Bummer.
We do live in San Diego, you know. They're probably never going to move out, actually.
Yes. That is true. That's a good point, right? It's like one, they can't afford it.
Yeah, I mean, like every house is like a $1 million house here now. It's ridiculous.
Every house everywhere.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, it's just, you know, a little extra bad here. If we didn't buy here 20 years ago, we would be elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah, true. Stephen Douglas, Dave, did Shabbat build the first few years of Friedman guitars? Yes. How can one tell if he made it?
First, like, year, maybe. Not very long. I could tell by this serial. Oh, if Friedman is printed on the back neck plate, it's like printed and there's a serial number printed and everything, like in a black writing, then that's a Grover guitar. If it was Shabbat, it's hand engraved. There's no Friedman on it. Mm. But those are like only like a year, so that wasn't very long.
Okay. Bruce Hawkins, I plan on running the SDE-3000 EVH in my effects loop of my JG Juno when it arrives. Effects send to Dunlop mini volume to SDE-3000 mono in, mono out to Skylar reverb, effects return. That works, right?
Yeah, that should work.
Yeah. Should work. Yeah, okay. Okay. Scrolling down here. Trevor, one more. Dave, loving my... Did I say this already?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I think maybe he did it twice.
Oh.
Nice.
I think. Maybe I'm wrong. But either way, Trevor, thanks so much. Greg Roberts, Dave Friedman, and Ron, would you advise young people, school, college students to take up a job doing what you do?
Maybe not. It depends. I guess it depends on how much you love guitar.
Yeah, you gotta love it because there are easier ways to make money.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. I mean, there are other things that you could make more money at, almost anything.
but if you're like a,
if you're a plumber, you might make more money.
But if you just happen to be obsessed with this stuff and you just, that's like the only stuff you want to do, then yeah, you know, sure. But it's not easy. But it can be fun.
Definitely can be fun. I mean, you know, I mean, I do fine. I'm not a rich man, so to speak. I do fine, but you know, I'm not necessarily wanting for anything, but I do not own a house currently though. I used to, not currently.
Well, you've also been through a couple divorces.
Yes. There's that.
That'll add to it, I would imagine.
That'll add to it.
Yes. And you've got several kids. Which
I have 4 children.
And they're expensive too. That's for sure.
Not anymore. Well, one is still.
Yeah. Still, yeah.
The others are hatched.
Right. True.
They hatched from the nest.
Roger Dat, thank you. Twin Sister Private Reserve Bipolar Edition. She's sweeter than honey. 1 second. Press the switch. She's a raging biatch. Okay.
Okay.
That works.
That works.
Modern Vintage again. Bro, you're sending them all in. Dave, is your lead time for building rack and amps rigs long, like with amp mods? Is it best for customers to buy the road cases, load it with gear, and send it to you, or do you prefer another method?
I'm just sorry, I'm rereading this.
There's only so many hours in a day.
No, I mean, lead time for building anything with a rig, it sort of depends on the workload that's happening right at that time when that's supposed to happen. You know, if we're not busy, then we can get on it right away. You know, if we are busy, I'm not sure. If a bunch of stuff stacked up, well, I don't know until you ask me to do it. Then I can tell you better. And as far as the gear, no, it's much easier if you just send the gear that you might own, or if you need certain pieces of gear, I can get it for you. And that I get the road cases here in order to do all that stuff. It just works out better generally. And then, you know, I don't know what we're building, but if it's a rack, well, just anticipate that there's going to be a cost for freighting it to you. If it's, although we do have a good deal on freight rates down at the factory. So it's not too bad generally. And, if it's pedal boards and things like that, that's easy. They just send them FedEx.
Ron, what's the guitar next to the Tele?
Ah, okay. That's my most special one. That's a Ruokangas. It's a
what?
Ruokangas. I'm probably butchering the name. Let me.
Yeah, show us.
I don't have any idea what that is.
Basically, it's a guy in Finland. There is the
you're right. I can't read that either.
Got this guy in Finland builds these, and I got this, it's like 2006, but just a really cool, you know, boutique builder guy's got a small shop there and just does amazing work. This was like kind of back then I was like all kind of about, you know, PRS and the like, and this was kind of like another level above, and just, I don't know, just, he was at NAMM 1 year and I checked it out and it was just, wow, this is just amazing. And so, yeah, it's my longest surviving guitar too. So,
oh, wow.
Super good stuff.
Isn't that funny? The longest surviving guitar. I have a guitar like that too. Like, oh, it's been with me for 20 so odd years. And I'm like, that's the oldest guitar I've got.
But it's, I've calmed down recently, but in the past have been like a real bad case of gear flipping. You know, I just go through just everything, and, you know, amps, guitars, and so, yeah. So longest surviving guitar is a pretty noteworthy thing, because I don't know, I always just wanted to, you know, try more stuff, because it was all just learning. It's like, well, what does this sound like? What is it like to play one of these? And so, and, you know, gear resale is, you know, generally pretty good, you know, so you can just kept the revolving door going for many years, but yeah, starting to settle down now though.
Yeah, I go through those phases too.
I had to stop the amp go round mostly, but I had to do it by just starting to just build my own just for fun. So it's basically, because it's like I figure, you know, if I build it and it's just like an ugly mess, and, you know, I know no one's going to want to buy it. So it'll just,
that's how you won't sell it.
That's right. I've just got this like ugly nightmare, but that in itself has been a great learning experience too. I mean, I would never go into the amp business. I knew too many people in it to even want to consider it, but it is super fun to, you know, do some so digital heavy with all the stuff I do. It's kind of cool. It's like kind of like, you know, working on an old car, you know, on the weekends or something like that. You know, just get in there with tubes and and turret boards and stuff like that. So I've got this I think 90s Plexi reissue that's been modded probably a dozen times, like complete, just massive, you know, overhauls. Just find some schematic on the internet and just have at it. So it's another fun little project we do around here, just in all my spare time.
yeah, extra time, you know.
Yeah, I know.
It's so funny. There's a repair guy in Las Vegas, that Carl Popick, that I use all the time, is a friend of mine. And he goes, you know, hey, I have a Soldano preamp. Would you consider modding it? I know I could do it, but I just will never do it. No, I'd rather just pay you to do it. I'm like, sure, let's do it.
That's funny.
I know that feeling. I totally know that feeling. And in fact, I have done things like that. She's like, hey, can I pay you to just do this for me? Because I'll never get to it otherwise. It just won't happen. I will always take the paying work over my own work.
Right.
You know, I just will always do that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's literally, I have several amp chassis sitting here, just open and partially in mid mod or something like that. And it's like, something not quite right with this. I have to look at it eventually.
It's fun. How I always look at our modding amplifiers for people and doing things is it's R&D for the amp line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mods I do are the experiments.
Sure.
And then, you know, sometimes it doesn't work out and you have to put it back to something you know works. But you know, sometimes it's like, yeah, let me try that. Yeah, let me try this for you. Does that sound good? Yeah. And if it works out well, you're like, great. I mean, I never let something that doesn't sound right or doesn't look right or function right out the door. That's not the way I would do it. But
you got to try it.
That's the experimenting. Yeah. And sometimes you try things when the amp is open on the bench. Oh, I can try this stuff in here. No, I don't like that. Okay, you put it back to the way you were doing it. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. And you chase your tail around and around and around and around.
John, the SD3000 EVH came with three cables, but I don't think it flips the phase.
No, those are ground lift
cables. For hum.
Just in case there's certain setups and certain things. That was a funny thing we were going through when that happened. We're like, you know, you potentially could have ground loops here, here, and here. Well, we try it here in our factory in Japan or whatever. And if you use the outside left and right outs and you ground lift them, you get no sound. And it dawned on me, right at that moment. They were saying that for a while, and then it dawned on me. I'm like going, well, wait a minute. In Japan, you have no ground, correct? There's no AC ground in Japan.
Huh.
So the amps are all lifted. So, yeah, if you lift the audio ground into the outside amp, no sound because there's no ground. I said that back to them, and then they never heard a word about it after that. That was funny.
Yeah. That was funny. Chad.
We have ground.
What happened to all the old episodes of Tone Talk? There's a bunch missing, and what's left is all out of order. Yeah. If you go on to YouTube, when they redid the YouTube page, you have to click the live tab. They have different tabs. Right. So if you go to our homepage and you just see the homepage, you're not going to see all of the shows. You got to click the tab that says clicks live, and then you'll see all of the shows there. They're all there. You just don't see all of them because we have so many shows. You don't see them all on the homepage.
Okay, what are we on now? What is Ron's show?
138.
138.
Oh, almost 150. We'll have to do something for that show.
That'll have to be a special show.
Yeah. Getting close. Yeah, that'll probably be in about a year. But
maybe, depending on how many shows we do.
Maybe
not.
Yeah, maybe not. Close.
I mean, if we kind of average 2 to 3 a month, maybe not.
True. Yeah, I think we've gone through all the questions. So.
Oh, look, Jack Howell signing up now for the special reserve.
There you go.
First customer.
That's a. I like the idea, actually, Dave. That's a really cool idea. You know, like Dave.
I can do it several times with different styles of amps and different like sort of things.
You know? Yeah. So. And you need to get back to with John over at Blackbird. He wants to do like a Friedman special amp.
Yeah.
That'd be cool because you know so many artists go through his studio.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of cool.
Someone here was a big RJM fan, and I can't find the post now. It was impressive with what he had.
I missed it.
I was wondering if I could find it.
I don't see it.
I can't find it right now. But it was impressive. It's like 4 buffers and a bunch of switchers and GT22 and
yeah, we like those people.
Yeah, we like those. That's good. Build a crazy rig.
Kevin Leary, PC PBC10 and a mini amp gizmo user. The built-in ISO transformer is what makes my rig work. Great stuff. Need an effects gizmo for my Iraq next.
Nice. Okay, we got him.
Yeah, is that the one, Dave?
No.
No. Oh. Okay.
No, nope, I don't know what it is.
All right. Well, you know, guys, I really appreciate you guys watching the show. And Ron, thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. This is great.
Tell Sherry I appreciate her.
2 hours and 20 minutes.
Hey, not bad.
Yeah, we've been on for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, really appreciate you, Ron, coming on. And nice to meet you. And I'm going to check out all your products. And make sure everybody else does. Go to RJMmusic.com. Check out RJMmusic.com, and you can check out all their products. And you can reach out to Sherry or Ron if you need anything.
Yep.
And let's see. Our next show is, I think we're going to have a break because I'm going to be gone for a couple weeks. So we'll probably come back and do an Ask Dave show towards the end of the month.
When do you leave?
The 11th.
Okay.
And,
maybe we can do something before then.
We could do something on the 9th if you're around. You want to do an Ask Dave show?
Yeah, or maybe I'd drum up another guest.
Okay. That sounds good. Yeah, see if we can line.
I mean, there's a bunch of other guests that we've talked about, and I just need to facilitate. But if not, we can do an Ask Dave show.
Yep.
Ask me more rig questions.
More SDE 3000 questions. Yeah, guys, please hit subscribe. Please hit the thumbs up and the like button, and you know. Go back and watch all our videos. I've been doing shorts for you guys. Hopefully you like those. And yeah, Mark looks ready for bed. Yeah, it's been a long day. Friday nights are tough, you know. It's what time is it now? It's almost 11:30. So I'm an old man at this point, you know. So I'm ready for bed. But again, Ron, thanks so much. Pleasure meeting you. Just hang on while we say goodbye. And everybody have a great weekend. We'll talk to you.
All right, see you guys later.
See y'all.